From meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
All right, Dr. Bev Smallwood is a PhD. She's a psychologist, an author. Her organization is called the Hope Center. It's one of the best. I've had her on before. I thought I'd bring her back to talk about the high-profile cases that we're covering here on Scared Monkeys Radio and other cable news networks are covering. You know, we're hearing everything now, in fact, what Casey Anthony had to eat in jail and what she can buy at the commissary to you name it. I want to go further than that. I want to talk about Casey Anthony. I want to talk about O.J. Simpson. I want to talk about what makes them tick, and I thought I'd bring on one of the best in the industry to talk about that. Dr. Smallwood, welcome.
Well, thank you for having me back.
Nice to have you on the show. You know, I'm not sure if you know, I probably told you before and you maybe forgot, but what I also do in my life besides host this talk show, I'm also a full-time police officer.
That's right.
And one of the things that you find very early on in life of police work or as a nurse or a doctor or a psychologist or whoever, you sometimes have to turn your human emotion off while you're doing your job, and you know it comes in and affects you later. I can remember many years ago dealing with a case where a young child was playing in the snow, and what he was doing is he would crawl up onto a tree limb and he'd jump off the tree limb into a big pile of snow, and him and his friends, and they'd go on and on. Mm-hmm. Well, one of the turns that he took when he jumped, a zipper on his jacket caught on the tree limb and he hung to death. There's a young child hanging from a tree, obviously dead. At that time, I'm a seasoned policeman, maybe 10, 12, 14 years on the job. But I'll tell you, I had young children at the time, Doc, and that one bothered me. I remember going home, and my wife brings the kids to the door because they always like to see Daddy, and I give them all a hug, and she didn't know what was going on, and until maybe now with this show, she may not know why I ever did that, and I turned around and I went back to my job. Listening to some of my... or talking to some of my listeners in the chat room tonight, some of them are sad because this case, this Casey Anthony case, is so sad. And I'm telling them, you know, don't worry, be happy. But it's that human emotion that we see with me and my listeners and other people that we're not seeing with Casey Anthony. And I want to navigate that a little bit. There's crocodile tears, but then there's real human emotion.
Exactly. And when you look at the big brown eyes of that little girl and you think about that mother, of course, she's presumed innocent until proven guilty. But my goodness, how in the world could a mother even think about harming her daughter that way?
You know, it's incredible, and we all sit back and we wonder, but we've seen the Susan Smiths and we've seen other cases.
Yes.
And doctors like yourselves will get called to court to explain why people do the things that they do.
Right.
But there's this fascination with the public, whether it's my audience or another audience, whether it's this case or O.J. Simpson or whoever, that we want to sit down and we want to watch and we want to see, and we want to see why Casey Anthony is Casey Anthony. The pundits will come on and say, well, she's narcissistic, she's a sociopath, she's all that. And we hear the $25 words, but we don't really know what they mean. Let's analyze those words a little bit.
Right, and of course, I have not examined her. I've only observed it from afar, as you have. But what we're probably looking at is one of one or more of a cluster of personality disorders. And a personality disorder is not the same thing as a brain-based mental disorder such as schizophrenia.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pattern, a pervasive pattern of dysfunctional kind of behaviors that linger over time, and probably what we're looking at with someone like Casey is either a borderline personality disorder, or she may have some antisocial traits or narcissism, as you've said. But really, when I look at her behavior, I think more about a borderline personality disorder. This is a person who has a pattern of unstable and intense interpersonal relationships. She doesn't really have a strong identity. She's impulsive, out doing things that are potentially self-damaging. And we've seen that even supposedly when her daughter had just gone missing, that she's out partying and that kind of thing. Then there's very often with this kind of person, there's suicidal behavior, but emotional instability, just the highs and lows in mood, and sometimes inappropriate or intense anger and difficulty controlling her anger. And so this pattern of instability is really what it looks like with her. I mean, I couldn't believe she sat there and just told one lie after another and contradicted herself time after time when talking to the police. You know, it was pretty unreal.
If you're just tuning in, Dr. Bev Smallwood is here. She's a PhD psychologist, author, and her website is drbevsmallwood.com. Go there and check that out. Again, with Casey Anthony, it's difficult sometimes to get the name straight because we have Casey is the mom and Kaylee is the little girl. And like you say, all you have to do is look at those brown eyes, that little girl, that little angel, that little face there. And you have to wonder, and we don't know the whole story. We can speculate, and the evidence will point towards certain things. But you have to wonder, allegedly, if Casey did take the life of her child accidentally or with malice, okay? And then to take the body and to dispose of it, a la Susan Smith, to blame someone else, a la Susan Smith, the mind must just be as cockeyed as it can be to do that. Or is that just that narcissistic trait that, you know, I might be able to get away with it, let's do it this way?
Might be able to get away with it, and those narcissistic traits also say, what's in my feelings, my desires, that's what supersedes everything, even to the point of, if my own daughter gets in the way, oh well. And that a narcissistic person sees themselves as somehow special and above, sometimes above the law, above the rules that apply to other mere mortals, and you know, just thinking they could get away with it. And you know, when any person with any degree of rationality and with their feet on the ground know that you can't continue to tell one conflicting story after another to the police and think that somehow it's just going to be looked over. That's crazy.
Let's get into the grandma and grandpa, mom and dad of Casey, George and Cindy Anthony. If you listen to the early 911 calls and you hear Cindy Anthony, you hear the desperation in her voice, you hear the anger, you hear the car smells like a damn dead body, you hear, I want my daughter arrested, to today, where you hear, my daughter is a victim as much as Kaylee is. I think there's a big difference between today's maybe denial or trying to do what you can to save your daughter to an actual emotion, which we heard in the very early days with the early 911 calls, which I think were legitimate.
I think the 911 calls were the genuine reaction.
Absolutely.
And one of two things has happened. Either over time, these parents have kind of circled the wagons and said, we're going to protect our daughter. You know, even I read in a report that they just had a prayer vigil with 100 people to bring Kaylee home and, you know, all of that kind of thing. So either they have made a deliberate choice to go ahead now and not be thinking or at least talking in the way that she was, I believe, genuinely talking when she made that 911 call, or they have gone into a pathological denial such that maybe they even believe it themselves now because they so want to believe it. But either way, there's such a contradiction there. And these people are either deliberately falsifying their perceptions, or they are in a very almost psychotic kind of denial.
You know, the whole story will come out eventually, Bev, and when it does, we'll find out maybe parts of the truth. I guess in these high-profile cases, you never find the whole story. But I want to get back to the listener, the John and Mary public that are out there that are fascinated with this story, that are listening to the show tonight, that are sad because of it. The officer that's investigating it, the searchers that are out there donating all their time and their resources to try and find the body, the baby, because we try to get the word closure, and I hate using that word closure, because a case like this is never closed. There's always that big story. But let's talk about that human emotion. Why do people follow these types of stories the way they do? Why do they care, and why are we so entranced with this type of story when there's a thousand of them out there?
You know, I think when we see a picture of a beautiful child, even though, as you said, all you have to do is walk by the walls where they have the pictures of all the missing children.
Right.
There's so many of them. But I think we're fascinated, like we would be with a rattlesnake. Looking at a rattlesnake, it's horrifying. At the same time, we can hardly turn our eyes away.
Right.
When we think about just the inconsistency and the incongruity of looking at that beautiful child, and here's an attractive woman. I mean, when she's, you know, wearing fixed up, she looks very attractive. And we cannot put the puzzle piece together about how you can get from point A to point Z, because it just doesn't fit with the typical everyday citizen's view of what could even be possible. Sometimes when you see things happening, you can kind of put yourself in that place and you can go, you know, I can see how maybe I don't think I would have done that, but given those circumstances, I might have done the same thing. But when you have that that total inconsistency in your mind of, I just don't get it, how this could have happened, then we're glued to the story.
When you look at being brazen, and I'm going to use that term, for Casey Anthony, when she's out writing checks on her friend's account, actually signing her own name to someone else's check, while her daughter is missing, buying beer and lingerie and everything else that she can, that whole psyche of, again, maybe the narcissistic personality, mm-hmm. to shut off what happened 3 days ago and let's completely deny it ever happened and just go on with life. Is that a sign when we see a Casey Anthony or whoever out doing these sorts of things that she's just totally out of control? She's not even going to think about the daughter. That part's done. We're going to go on to the next step.
Yeah, out of control would be one way to say it, but you also have to just look at such a callousness in that. There are some people, Dana, who are just they're just cold. I mean, their conscience is just not functioning. And when you look at someone who can, if she did that, and then just be out partying and lying and having a good time and then continuing to write checks and whatever else, there's just a coldness about that is blood curdling, really.
Listening to some of the media coverage, and there's been a lot of it, and we try to follow as much as we can here on the show, we hear some comments made by the grandparents in particular that shoot up red flags immediately. One of the comments came from the grandfather, George, and I'm paraphrasing here a little bit, when he's asked about the test results regarding decomposition in the backseat of the car, and his response was, the body that was in my daughter's car was not not my granddaughter. And when
I did not hear that.
Yeah, he said it very clearly. And when you hear it, it makes you or me as a longtime police officer, longtime talk show host, sit back and wonder, does he even know what he's saying? Is that, again, is that denial? He knows everything that's gone on, or is it just emotion and he just didn't realize what he said?
Yeah, or does he know it somewhere in the back of his mind? He's trying not to believe it, but it just comes straight out of the mouth. It reminds me the other day, Dana, I was testifying in a murder trial, and the DA came out and said to this man who was charged with the murder, he brings out this big knife, and he says, "Do you see this? Have you ever seen this knife?" And the man said, "Uh-uh, that's not the knife I used."
And what was the reaction from the DA?
Well, you can imagine.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But what you just said about that statement reminds me of that. You know, the truth tends to come out.
Well, that's just it. We all try to, they call them exculpatory, or when you blurt out a statement, usually what's blurted out without thinking is the truth, or am I wrong?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Right.
You know, when someone says that off-the-cuff remark, but, Dr. Beth Smallwood is here, and we're talking about Casey and Kaylee Anthony. Another person, Doc, that's been in the news is Orenthal James Simpson.
Orenthal James.
Yeah, watching that story unfold, 1994, whenever it was, and then 13 years to the day he's convicted, and I made special attention, because I like to watch facial expression. And when I saw him sentenced, or not sentenced, when I saw him found guilty this time, I made a conscious effort to watch his face, the reaction, and how his face, he actually sighed. And it almost seemed to me like he wasn't shocked, and maybe he was glad to get it over with, or am I wrong?
I would really doubt that about him. I think that OJ is a classic narcissist, and someone with that narcissistic personality really just always thinks they're special, and that it's just not going to happen to them. The name of my book is "This Wasn't Supposed to Happen to Me," and I think he was really feeling that right that minute. It just wasn't supposed to. And so, yes, there was an involuntary sigh. I saw that, but I don't think it was a sigh of relief. I think that, as a matter of fact, they've already filed appeals galore, of course, about the trial. OJ has lived, whether you're talking about the civil suit in which he was supposed to give the Goldmans money, or, you know, one have their own opinions about the murder trial.
Right.
But I believe that he has just never believed that he was going to have to be held accountable because he was special.
And that special aspect, and maybe I didn't phrase my question properly, because I believe he's probably, if you looked up narcissist in the dictionary, you'd see his picture. But
exactly.
Maybe he's the type of narcissist that thinks this is the next step in his life. He sighed. He knows he's going to go to jail, but now people are going to pay more attention to OJ because he'd been out of the limelight for a little while, and now he's going to be talked about all the time, although that doesn't seem to be happening.
No, it doesn't seem to be happening, but I really would not think that would be his reaction. Maybe later he'll learn to milk that a little bit that way, and probably will. But people who are narcissistic, when there is an injury to their self-esteem, to their inflated self-esteem, when not everybody gives them accolades, or else there's a direct injury like there was when he was convicted of these crimes, that's very, very painful to a narcissist. We call it a narcissistic injury. So I think he was probably a little bit almost numb right then, but believe me, it will hit him if it didn't then, because that's just not what OJ ever thought it was going to happen happened to him.
You know, when you hear the term escape mechanism, I've never been one to really understand it or to believe in it, so to speak. But you have a personality like Casey Anthony, like O.J. Simpson, the typical narcissist. What is their escape mechanism? Is it for Casey out partying, having every boyfriend, interested in everything with male jeans on, and O.J. trying to get in front of the camera as much as he can? Or do narcissists look for that?
Yes, they do look for that. They look for that attention. And so was Casey out partying to escape, or was she just loving that attention and just having herself a party? Well, probably all of the above. Attention really is the central factor for a narcissist. They love to be admired. They love to have those accolades, whether it's one-on-one with someone seductively or whether it's with the public accolades in front of a camera.
One last question, and my guest this segment, Dr. Bev Smallwood, her website is drbevsmallwood.com. We're going to see more, obviously, of Casey Anthony, and hopefully Kaylee can be found. And I mentioned earlier on, I don't like the term closure. I think of all the times that I've spoken to Beth Holloway, the mother of Natalie Holloway, and to see what a family goes through when their loved one is missing. And we all know that the Anthonys, there's a bigger family than just grandma, grandpa, and the brother. There's other people that I'm sure love and care for that little girl. In fact, the majority of my audience included. What are we to expect psychologically when it comes down to the final part of this whole case? Are we going to be shocked when we find out exactly what happened, and how should we handle it?
Well, I'm sure that, I don't know that we'll be shocked. I think we'll be saddened. At this point, I think anybody who's followed this case has begun to come to terms with the fact that this was a horrific happening, whatever it was and however it happened. So I don't think we'll be shocked, but I think that it'll be really gut-wrenching to think about the callousness of this mother. For anyone to be that cruel to a child, whatever happened, but for it to be her own mother, and yet we do have to know that even though there's a lot of crime out there, people are doing some horrible things, this really is an anomaly. And we don't need to get too pessimistic about it and say, oh, the whole world's going to heck in a handbasket, but just, try to make a difference in our world where we are right now, to make it as positive as possible, and look at the children in our own lives and try to make a difference to them, because we can absolutely get ourselves depressed if we try to, if we think too much about this kind of thing and just tell ourselves that the whole world is a mess. Make a difference where you are. Do all you can with all you have where you are right now.
I think that's said very well, and again takes me back to coming home and hugging my own kids after tragedy that I, and I've seen a lot of tragedy since then, but that one hit me right between the eyes, and I think that's the best thing to do. Like the old song says, don't worry, be happy. Dr. Smallwood, always a pleasure.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's Dr. Bev Smallwood. Again, her website is drbevsmallwood.com. So there you go. BT girl and all you other monkeys that are a little bit sad tonight, cheer up. I'll give you a hug through the radio here. The next story that we're going to cover tonight on the show is, it's wild. I'll tell you, I've covered a lot of shows or covered a lot of stories on this show, but this one has to do with the slain police officer, Davina Buff Jones, and what really happened. And her sister's going to be here in just a few minutes. She's the author of the book Out With Three, The Murder and Betrayal of Baldhead Island Police Officer Davina Buff Jones. And it's a story that needs to be told that you won't believe. That's here on Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Scared Monkeys Radio. Once again, here's your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, we're back. The story of Davina Buff Jones is one that needs to be told. Elaine Buff is Davina's sister. She is the author of Out With Three, The Murder and Betrayal of Baldhead Island Police Officer Davina Buff Jones. The story is incredible. Davina was found shot in the back of the head on Bald Island, North Carolina. Of course, she was a police officer. This crime appears to have been covered up. The powers to be say it's suicide, but based on how she was shot and the other evidence, her sister and family say otherwise. I want you to listen to something, and Elaine, I'm going to put you on in just a second. This next clip, it's about 26 seconds long, are the last words that Officer Davina Buff Jones spoke in her radio. And I think it's very, very, very important to this case. In fact, it baffles me also as an investigator as to why more weight wasn't put on what you're about to hear. It may be a little disturbing for you, but I want you to hear it anyway.
The last words she'd ever speak on police radio near the old Baldy Lighthouse.
14-6. 10-4, show me out with three. Stand by, please. And I do have a gun here on Bowie at all, okay? Come on, do me the favor. Put down.
Is disturbing even for me to listen to. My next guest must find it disturbing too, but I think it's also very important to have that clip as part of this story. Elaine, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
That clip is so important. Out With Three, she talks about having a gun on Baldhead Island, that's, you know, and what I'm getting from the last part of it, where the audio drifts off and there's some feedback, is that she may have keyed her portable radio and being close to her vehicle at the same time, maybe to take cover, whatever, and one radio was feeding back off the other. But we'll talk about that in a little bit. This is a story of your sister. This is a story of alleged corruption and cover-up, and it's a story that needs to be told. Let's talk about your sister a little bit first, and then we'll get into how she lost her life.
All right. The first thing I'd like to say is this is a wonderful time to be on your show, because at 15 until midnight last night was the ninth year anniversary of her death. We had been fighting this struggle for 9 years. She was a rookie policeman working on an island for the rich and famous. It's a vacation island, reachable only by ferry. When you get there, there are no motorized vehicles there except those used to do work on the island. All of the transportation is either on bicycle, foot, or golf cart. And during her rookie, she went to work there in January.
Mm-hmm.
And during the time that she worked there, she got into trouble because if you broke the law, she would write you a ticket. And if you had money or if you had a name, it didn't faze her.
Mm-hmm.
And so when she would write tickets, the powers that be would want her to tear the tickets up.
Right.
And so as time went on, she made more and more enemies on the island from the powers that be running the village there. Because she treated everybody the same way. And she was in the process of trying to find a job elsewhere when, on the Monday before she was killed, everybody around here knows that there is drug activity on the island. It has been there. It will continue there.
Mm-hmm.
There's a drug dealer who lives on the island, and she observed on that Monday some drugs during this time of year. There are low-flying planes that come and they drop the drugs in the water. You can look at the newspapers, look back and see where they have found kilos of cocaine floating, for example, when they were out fishing. And she observed some drugs being unloaded and put in a white van and taken to a particular house on the island, and they were unloaded.
I'll just interrupt for a second, Elaine. How do you know that?
Because she told some people.
Okay.
And she was a prolific writer, and she kept copious notes and journals, and I would bet anything that she made a police report.
Right.
She was a stickler for doing things the right way. And that happened on Monday, and she was dead by Friday of the same week.
Tell me a little bit about the Bald Head Police Department. How many officers, chief, how many working at one time, etc.?
Well, at the time, the police chief was out because she was having some trouble. So she was out on extended sick leave, and they had an acting police chief who was there. And the day she was killed, he was gone, as a matter of fact, off the island on business. There were about 10 police officers, and she and one other person, there were two females on there at the time. She was on duty that night with her partner was also more or less a rookie. He had been a policeman for less than a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
So really they had two rookies on duty that night. And the backup for them that night was the fire chief. He was the only other person on that island who was supposed to have a gun.
Right.
So when her partner found her, that's who he caught. And then it took 20 minutes for the police on the mainland to get over there. And in the meantime, that's when they moved the crime scene and everything around. So by the time the police from the mainland got there, her body had already been moved. The gun had been moved two or three different times. And her body was on a gurney laying out there on the dock.
And I understand. I understand, Elaine, that very degrading, and I apologize if this disturbed you, that she wasn't even covered up.
Well, one of the EMTs in his report said that he covered her up. Hmm. However, when they closed down some of the restaurants and told him to come down to the ferry to be taken back to the mainland, they reported seeing her laying there uncovered on the gurney. And that's one of the things I have not been able to find out is how she got uncovered.
And
also, when they finally put her in a little office that's there on the dock, there was a police officer put in charge of who came in to see the body and who went out, and there must have been 15, 20 people who went in to see the body that had nothing to do with the investigation.
It sounds like the investigation was bungled right from the get-go. And
yes, it was.
The audio clip that I played at the start of the interview shows her calling her dispatcher, saying she's out with three, and that's common police jargon. When we say we're out, that means we're out checking a car, we're out checking a pedestrian. And when she says she's out with three, but what I find interesting hearing that clip is you hear a discussion that she's having with someone that she's talking to about having a gun on Bald Head Island. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Well, her partner, who was deposed at least three times, and every time he told it, his story got a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
When you work on Bald Head, there is a special situation so that if you are, most of the police officers at night talk on Channel 1. And when she began talking, she was on Channel 1. Well, when she got in the process of getting out, and when she got out, it's very, very important that you understand, in that particular place on Bald Head Island, there is absolutely no light.
Right.
The lighthouse, it was right in front of the lighthouse. The lighthouse has a light that doesn't work like regular lighthouses where the light goes around. It shines straight up into the air. So there's no light around there except for her truck lights. So when she got out, she turned her portable mic onto Channel 2.
Okay.
And it's the broadcast area there is such that when you turn to Channel 2, you can only be heard by the dispatchers on the mainland and her partner. Nobody else can hear you, but it's crystal clear. So she turned that channel knowing that. All right, then later on, the DA himself said, well, the only way that they didn't hear the gunshot was if the microphone was turned off.
Right.
Well, that's true. The dispatcher didn't hear
the gunshot. So I can only assume from his comment then that somebody turned the microphone off.
Yeah, and that's very possible. The DA, Rex Gore, who... I'm trying to be careful here with the words that I choose, but seems to have been blindfolded when it comes to being reasonable and understanding this case.
Yes.
He is still sticking to the fact that they're saying that your sister committed suicide. First of all, how in God's name could they even come up with that scenario? And second of all, when another hearing felt that it was unexplained, this is the death of a police officer, why is this case still closed and not been reopened?
Well, I'll have to be careful in how I answer that as well. Let me go back to her microphone, though. In the police record, one of the policemen made sure, he said, we checked her mic, meaning her portable, and he said it was still on channel 1. So I know it went from 1 to 2 to off and back to 1. Now, my sister's really smart if she can blow a hole in the back of her head and then turn around and twist her microphone back on again after she turned it off to kill herself and then turn it back on.
Yeah.
She's good.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, the place where she saw the drugs unloaded is the home of a high-ranking official in this state who at the time had high enough office that he controlled all legal maneuvers in this state. He also used to work with the current DA, and the DA's daughter worked in this gentleman's office. And our sheriff, our ex-sheriff now, because you know he lost his job.
Right.
He was charged with obstruction of justice and a few other things. He lives in a $246,000 home, and it's one of the homes that he has. So most of the county around here believes that maybe when the drugs come through, part of the reason that they're allowed to do so is because maybe there's some money going some places, if you follow my drift there.
Well, I follow exactly what you're saying.
But now this person is even higher than he was when he could control the attorney general. So when we went to the legislators that we knew trying to get help, they were told, leave this alone. When the police chief on Ballhead tried to get something done, she was told, go back home and close your mouth. There were some people of interest who was on the island for less than 24 hours and they left. And later on, when we did some investigating, we found out that they were, one of them was a deported felon. They patted them on the head, sent them back home. They lied and said the FBI had checked them out. They had 60-some pages of rap sheets between them. The FBI then came back later and admitted, well, they really didn't go talk to these people. They really didn't go to where they were in Charlotte, North Carolina. They called the FBI over, they called the agency there, and the agency there called these people's employer, and he said they were good people, so that was it. That's the kind of investigation I've run into so far. Even when the sheriff was indicted, I made sure that the people, the federal people there who were doing the case, got materials about the book, got the background stuff that I had, and they still don't see any reason to go forward with this case. This case is the biggest thing that's happened in this county, and I still can't get anybody to do anything, and I can't find a lawyer in this state who will touch this case when they find out how far up it goes. It doesn't matter. It's not that she's my sister. She was a police officer.
Right.
They did, police people help do this, and then they covered it up. It was because half of them were in on something that she was trying to bring about a close to.
I'm talking to Elaine Buff. She's the author of Out With Three, The Murder and Betrayal of Baldhead Police Island Officer Davina Buff-Jones, who also was my guest's sister.
Now, to show you how bad it was and how bad the family was treated, you know, the clip that we were talking about and you played?
Right, yep.
When they played it on the news after she was murdered, it's the first time we ever heard it.
Jeez.
They never even bothered to let us hear it first.
Have you had access to the investigation, the investigative file, so to speak, or have you had problems getting that too?
Well, yes. Well, my father hired a private eye, and he came and got a hold of some of it. And then the reason that I wrote the book was after we went through this, the local and the state, and when we did the state hearing to show you how it works in this state, we went through the state, went through the Industrial Commission, because the only way we could get into any kind of a legal situation was to pursue the death benefits for her.
Mm-hmm.
And we won the first time. The state appealed the case. That is unheard of, almost, because most benefits hearings, you know, are judged in favor of the family. The state appealed it, made us go before the entire Industrial Commission. Not only did they double the amount of the award, they chastised the state for bringing it back up. Then we went to the federal, and we won there. Each time we brought all this stuff back, the DA said it was not enough to make him change his mind. Now, I don't know what else he needs. You know, when the Department of Justice gets involved and investigates something on their own, you would think. So then we sat down and we decided we want to go through and we want to see if we can find out the truth, no matter where it goes.
Absolutely.
Family has always said, if she killed herself and you can prove it, we can live with that.
Yep.
But we can't live with blood in one place and blood over here somewhere else and a bloody fingerprint on a truck, and you're saying it's hers and it's yards from where her body was. How could she do that?
When you, and I'm getting some email here from some of the listeners saying that they weren't able to understand the clip I played, so I do have it transcribed. I'll read it out. Jones, 10-4, affirmative, show me out with three. Stand by, please. Jones spoke with Mike Keed. There ain't no reason to have a gun here on Baldhead Island, okay? You want to put the gun... or put down the gun. Come on, do me a favor and put down the gun. Squelch at a high-pitched frequency. Come on. And then that's where it ended. How in God's name can that be ignored? If someone is going to take their life...
You asked me earlier today if the tape had ever been analyzed, by the way. Sheriff said there was no need in doing that because she committed suicide.
Oh, jeez.
They decided all that in less than 6 weeks.
Oh.
And the Baldhead Island police chief had a company here analyze it, and they said, and they didn't get a digital copy, but what they did get, they took to the people who provided the radios, and they said there is evidence that somebody else was talking.
In the background.
And I started to say this a while ago and got sidetracked. I'm sorry, I get carried away.
No, it's okay.
Her partner said at one point during one of his interviews, he said, and then they quit talking.
Right.
Well, who's the they then, yep, if she was the only one?
Yep. This is so...
That night there was only the dispatcher and he were the only two who heard her because she was on Channel 2.
Yep. This is so big. This is so crazy that you're not getting the support that you should be getting. And your sister came on to something so big that she lost her life because of it. Now,
sir,
you are working on this case, trying to do what you can for your family. And justice, are you concerned for your own safety?
Yes, sir.
Why?
Because they think that, number one, when the book came out, a lot of people got it, and a lot of the police got it because they're all named.
Right.
And people said to me, you're going to put their names in it. And we sat down as a family, and we decided whatever we find, we find. And we pulled out boxes and stuff that we didn't even know people claimed. When the police chief quit, she put stuff in boxes and just handed it to the family. And after we went through all these cases, we decided I was going to sit and write all this stuff, pulled out all those boxes and found stuff that I had no idea existed. The family had to sit down and go through and read this stuff, and we found letters and emails and anything that's in that book that's documented, I have. Not in my possession, but I've got it put away somewhere. And we found that people we thought were friends were not friends, and people that we didn't know were friends were really friends at the time. And they thought the book was going to go away. And I have just made up my mind since we got into this. You have to die for something. She was willing to put her life on the line for people who didn't care. They were more concerned and got up in a meeting that week and said, we want this not to be a murder because the prices of our houses will go down. The two brothers who have the island don't own it. Their father does. He's a multi-billionaire, a very nice man from what I've read. But he told them, you will have this island to run until you do something to embarrass the family, then I'm taking it back. There was a rumor going around like this summer that he said that he would sell it for a dollar to anybody with the money to take it over immediately.
Right.
They can't afford anything bad to go out. So they were willing to chunk my sister like they did that night. They dumped her body at a trash pile and leave it.
When you...
My thing is, I'm willing to go right along behind her. She died for what she believed in. And I believe that a police officer, if they're doing their job, especially in this day and time, ought to have people behind them. If they don't, they ought to all lay down their badges, which we never even got. We never got our badge. We don't deserve a country if we're not willing to stand up for what is right. No matter who those officers are, if they're putting their life on the line for us every day, then we ought to stand up for them.
That is so true. My last question. Has the media been intimidated by these powers to be the same as...
Sir, I can't get anything out of here. They won't listen, they won't talk, they won't do anything. Even the assistant U.S. attorney who was in charge of the case against the sheriff wouldn't listen, doesn't intend to do anything else. The newspapers, even away from here, won't have anything to do with it. Nobody will touch it because of who this man is at the top. And he's getting ready, once he gets out of office in January, to run for U.S. Senate from this state. Won't that be great? That's exactly what we need in Washington.
Someone with blood on his hands.
Yes.
Elaine, I want to keep doing more on this story, although our time is up this evening. If you had a message out there for the media, for the Justice Department, for someone, you're asking for help to bring justice to your sister, a former police officer who lost her life in the line of duty, what would that message be?
I need somebody willing to walk with me into a civil court and hold these people accountable for what they did. It took five men, I think, to take on this little 4-foot-9-inch girl that weighed 90 pounds if she was soaking wet. Y'all are big, brave men. I need somebody brave enough to go in and take down somebody rotten who doesn't deserve to have a public office.
The book is out.
I don't need to be inflicted on anybody else. I need help, and I can't find it. I've talked to lawyers, and they don't even call me back half the time. And my mom and daddy have suffered enough in 9 years. We all have. And anybody who believes in this country has suffered because this thing is not just against my sister. It's against anybody who believes in what this country is supposed to be all about.
The book is out with three, The Murder and Betrayal of Baldhead Island Police Officer Davina Buff-Jones. Elaine Buff, thank you, and we'll stay in touch.
Thank you very much.
You know how to contact me. Okay, bye-bye.
The last words she'd ever speak on police radio near the old Baldy Lighthouse.
44-6. 10-4, show me out with three. Stand by, please.
Do me a favor and put down the gun. She's not talking about her own gun. This case needs to be investigated further. My name's Dana Pretzer. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back with Mark Williams. He's the news director of WNDB Radio.
And now, more of the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. Here's Dana.
All right, we're back. You'll know Mark Williams as the news director for WNDB-AM. Also, he's a regular on the Nancy Grace Show, talking about, of course, what we want to talk about tonight, the Kaylee/Casey Anthony case and the ever-changing world that case evolves around. Mark, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me, Dana.
Now, you've been in the news business for a long time, many different radio, TV stations. Have you ever covered a case like this?
Never. This I thought, was going to be wrapped up rather quickly by the Orange County Sheriff's Office, just due to the fact I know their caliber of work. I know the sheriff down there. He's a no-nonsense guy, and I thought they'd have this thing wrapped up in very short order. This thing has dragged on since July 16th, the day she was arrested, Casey Anthony was arrested, and now we're into the middle of October, and it still continues.
Now, we've all taken our turns covering this case as much as possible. I've had Cindy Anthony on my program, and I've spoken to George and Leonard Padilla and everyone involved in this. But this case seems to spiral 360 degrees every time you turn around from, again, the bounty hunters to the entertainment people to the interviews to the book deals to the fact and the, like Jack Webb used to say, just the fact that Casey Anthony is a pathological liar, and if she'd told the truth right from the get-go, we may not be talking about this right now.
Boy, you hit that right on the head. And, you know, my contention is, if, and we don't know this, this is just a supposition on my part,
right?
If the child drowned in the pool, if she would have called 911, she could have been free and clear and partying right now, okay? Because it would have absolved her of anything. But apparently, you know, we have bodies that are buried in the back of the Anthony household, and we have a body that was transported in her Pontiac. I mean, this is fact, brought to the grand jury recently, because cadaver dogs hit on all three places.
Of course, there's forensic evidence, the air samples, the chloroform, like you say, the cadaver dogs, all of that. And when you look at George Anthony and Cindy Anthony and you compare the early days where the 911 calls were released and you heard the panic in the voice of Cindy Anthony to today where they're going on the high-profile morning shows and protecting their daughter, we can understand all as parents, you and I and everyone else, how you want to protect your child, but there certainly is a big change from the early days to what it is right now.
Well, here's one thing that strikes me down is the fact that the sheriff's office, the investigators, have said this girl is no longer with us anymore. Okay, the parents remain in denial, and they keep enabling their daughter, who they've enabled for the past 22 years, and it's just a continuing cycle. It just absolutely blows my mind that these folks can't come to reality.
Yeah, reality and the truth are far apart when it comes to the Anthony family. Tim Miller is a regular guest on my program. He's the salt of the earth. You couldn't find a nicer guy, a more caring fella. Of course, he's a victim of crime himself. But when you see what he has gone through and his organization has gone through from a news perspective, Mark, I'd like to get your comments on Tim Miller, Texas Equisearch, and the search for Kaylee.
Tim Miller, I've yet to meet him. However, there's a big search plan for the 8th of November near the Orlando airport. Details to be really released in a couple of days.
Right.
But he'll be in town as well as Leonard Padilla. And here's the deal, is Tim is the salt of the earth.
Yeah.
This guy has no pretenses. Equisearch has already spent $44,000 on the Anthony search alone. Tim has been called to come to other places as well to help search for people, which he's doing. The Anthony thing is not his primary deal right now. He's kind of spread thin, but he is coming back for a search on the 8th. Leonard Padilla, I talked to him on phone a couple of days ago. He'll be back also to help Tim search on the 8th. And Leonard has put out a call to all his bail bonds friends to come to Orlando to join in the search. It's going to be massive. And if anybody can find anything, it's going to be Equisearch with Tim Miller and Leonard Padilla.
Yeah, absolutely. And when, you know, and I appreciate you coming on, Mark, but you in the news business for as long as you've been, and you've said that you've never covered a story like this before, but this story will finally come to a close sometime, we hope. Hopefully with Kaylee being found, Kaylee is in a much better place than all of us are right now. I think we can all admit that. But when you look at the trial coverage, and it's going to be big, it's going to be huge, without that body, what's going to happen? What are we looking at here?
I think prosecutors have left a little wiggle room, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because they, of course, have charged her with first-degree murder. They've also charged her with manslaughter. And the state attorney, Lawson Lamar, has not said whether he'll seek the death penalty or not. And I think the reason he's remaining quiet on that is if they find the body, he will go after the death penalty. If they don't find the body, it could all be bargained down to manslaughter and she spends her time in some time in prison. But if it's a death penalty case, or if it comes down to a death, they find the body and you know, the murder charges go through, you know, the jury can either send her to life in prison or sentence her to death by lethal injection here in the state of Florida.
When you look at these high-profile cases, Mark, and you covering it from the radio perspective, being a commentator on the Nancy Grace Show, etc., some criticism has come forward from folks out there, including myself, that maybe the media is covering a little bit too much of this. I particularly don't care what Casey Anthony can buy at the commissary in jail, moon pies and bras and things like that. And it takes me back to when John Mark Carr admitted to killing JonBenet Ramsey, and we heard quite a bit of coverage on air on Fox News about how he was snacking on shrimp and sipping champagne on the way back here. With so many missing people out there and so many stories, is the media doing a good job on this case, or are we just doing too much on this case and we should maybe sit back and let the chips fall where they may?
You know, this story was first basically pretty much a local story, okay? Then it went national, and this story has grown legs. This thing has everything you ever wanted in a story. First off, a missing little girl, a mother who doesn't care,
yeah.
Parents who are somewhat dysfunctional, the entire family to a certain extent dysfunctional, sex, pictures. What else do you want in a story? And lies. Sex, lies, and pictures.
Yep.
I mean, that's what it comes down to. And, you know, people have camped out. Network crews and local crews have literally camped out on High Springs Drive since July. And even one television station has a webcam pointed at the house.
Right.
So there obviously is interest. The public has interest in this. Or the media wouldn't do it. Sometimes it's extreme. And by the way, I saw that list of things that Casey could buy. Spam in a pouch, $1.60.
Oh, my God. But, you know, you're right. The public's fascination, and call it a macabre fascination, I don't care what you call it, there is a fascination with these high-profile cases. All you have to do is look at a picture of Kaylee Anthony, and your heart goes out for that little girl. My last question, being where you are, covering the stories that you do cover, I've covered a few of them, too. Drew Kessie and I are friends. I've covered the Jennifer Kessie story many times. A missing person in that area. It just seems like, Mark, the stories never end. Every time that you turn around, and I'm sure in your newsroom, something else comes up. Is that a sign of the times, or are we just doing a better job now? I'm going to switch gears a little bit as media covering these stories.
Boy, that's a great question, and that's why you ask it. You know, it's tough to say because with today's instantaneous access to news, the web, you can do breaking live shots. I mean, the television stations in particular have got to use their capital investments, and that's why there's such a fascination for this. They can go live in a heartbeat. They could fly their helicopters over the truck that Casey's in, going either to a lawyer's house or going home. And any move that is made, it was documented. Now she sits in a jail cell, 12 by 7 by 8, and there's really no news, but for some odd reason, these reporters are just digging certain things up all the time. At one time in Orlando television, it led the A block. Now it's basically B block story, but most of the stories are pretty good. I think, you know, my theory is how far down can you dig until you hit the bottom?
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to, Dana.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And what was that, in a pouch again?
Spam in a pouch.
Mark Williams, WNDB News Director. Thank you, sir.
You bet, anytime.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
You bet.
And that's Mark Williams from WNDB. You see him nightly on Nancy Grace. This is Scare Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back. And I sat down with Leonard Padilla. You know him as the bounty hunter who first put up the bond for Casey Anthony this afternoon to get an update from him. And then I'll stay on the air for a couple more minutes after that. If you want to call in, I'll give you the call-in number now, but don't call in until Leonard is all finished. 306-842-7884, 306-842-7884. Here's Leonard. Okay, we're back. Bounty hunter Leonard Padilla is here, and what I've been hearing on the news, and I want Leonard to confirm it, one way or the other, that the big search is coming up in early November. Leonard and the team from Texas EquiSearch and others will be heading back down to Orlando. Hi, Leonard.
Good morning.
How are you, sir?
Fine. How you doing?
I'm hearing good things about you and Tim Miller, Texas EquiSearch, and the group getting down to Orlando and a massive effort to find Kaylee.
We're hoping that we'll have at least 2,000 people in the area.
Wow.
To assist in the search. I myself am trying to get at least 500 people out of the bail bond industry, including bounty hunters, and so far I've probably had around 70 to 80 phone calls in just 2 days from people saying, yep, we'll meet you there on the 7th. So what we're hoping is that we can stretch a line across there, half a mile to three quarters of a mile long, and then just make several sweeps through some of these areas where the phone pings are.
Now, hearing Tim Miller and watching some of the coverage, the vegetation has started to die off and the water has gone down a little bit. But some of the questions that pop up from my listeners is, okay, you find something. Are people trained enough to know not to touch, to get a hold of law enforcement? Obviously, your group is, because you are quasi-law enforcement. You probably don't like me saying that, but...
We don't like to admit it.
But
well, here's the situation. The people will be handed information, and it's not like they're going to be sent out there willy-nilly. There's team leaders from the bail bond industry that will be appointed. And each one will have anywhere from 25 to 75 people, and they will be instructed. If you see anything, I mean a gum wrapper, you stop.
Yeah.
Signal, and then there will be people that will come forward and identify or categorize or whatever Tim instructs the people to do.
Yeah, I'm sure that it's handled professionally.
Tim really knows his business. And
yeah.
And I've been involved in searches forever. Every time that something comes up like this in Sacramento area, we basically volunteer. But I can tell you this, that it's not a difficult chore if the people just pay attention to the fact that if you see something that's out of sorts, you stop. And the people around you stop. And then somebody comes forward, identifies it, bags it, tags it, and then you then go forward.
Yeah, and that's the important thing. And again, the organization, Texas EquiSearch, and yourself, I'm sure will do the best you can.
Well, Tim knows, I'm telling you. Yeah. Tim is the best there is.
No, let's get to Casey for a minute here. The news coverage has turned now to her being in jail, and I think it's important to know that she doesn't have any pictures of her little girl hanging up on the wall. But as far as her buying stuff from the commissary, you know, spam in a pouch and a bra for $5, I could care less.
Yeah, that's, you know, sometimes, but you have to understand that sometimes people get caught up in that have never been around the inside of a jail.
Yeah.
To them, it's like, I couldn't believe this, you know. But they get caught up in it, and you just kind of have to deal with it at the time. Casey herself, as far as her attitude right now, is that I didn't do it, and I'm sticking to that story.
The parents are making the rounds on the morning shows, the Today Show, etc., and they're holding out hope, at least they say they're holding out hope that Kaylee is alive, but there's a difference between hope and enabling your daughter. I like your comments on what Cindy Anthony has been saying the last few days.
No, Cindy knows that the child is dead. George knows the child is dead. The latter part of August when we were there, George, on two occasions, just let it all out. And he knows the child is dead. But right now, they've got an economic issue to deal with.
Yeah.
The attorney is sitting there saying, I can beat this case. He's not saying he can prove her innocent. He's telling him he can beat it. And time is on his side. Therefore, it takes money to get that time, to purchase that time. So it's a situation where, okay, how do we raise money? Well, obviously, the easiest way to do it is to keep the mind of the people in a mindset that the child is alive.
Yeah.
If you can do that, they'll continue to send donations. Now, Cindy herself just a week ago set up her own foundation to where she doesn't have to rely on calling people to get money. She can just have the people send it direct to her, and you'll see a massive amount of publicity going out saying, send your donations to the Kaylee Anthony Foundation.
And
Cindy has complete control.
Yeah. It's sad that the media people have taken over that part of the case, because you're right, there's a follow the money trail aspect to it. But just before I let you go, Leonard, one final thought from you about the search on November 8th. I know you're holding out hope, and I agree with you. If anyone can find this little baby, it's Tim Miller.
Correct. Absolutely.
And let's hope.
Not in my mind that if anybody can do it, he can do it. Yeah.
And let's hope.
All he needs is enough people out there.
Let's hope that we can do that. And I want to thank you for helping the folks with the search and getting organized.
Tell all your listeners to send $5 to Nancy Grace at New York Care CNN.
Okay. All right.
That's all it takes, $5 from each one of them.
All right. Thank you, sir.
You bet.
Okay. Bye bye. I think he probably meant. Well, okay. Nancy Grace, I'm not sure, wants $5 from each of you, but a $5 donation to Texas EquiSearch will help. I'm assuming that's what he meant. Or to Nancy Grace at CNN to help with the search. Whatever. Let's donate. Let's help find Kaylee Anthony, because there's a lot of answers there. My name's Dana Pretzer. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back. Okay, we are back, and what I thought I'd do is open up the phone line for a couple of minutes to see if you're interested in calling in. If you're not, that's fine. I do ask, though, that if you're listening to the podcast or to the replay, not to call in, only call in during a live broadcast. The telephone number is area code 306, the number 842-7884, 306-842-7884. Yeah, I'm not sure what Leonard was talking about as far as sending $5 to Nancy Grace. I know Nancy Grace has been putting up the donation information on how to donate to Texas EquiSearch, and I think that's probably just as important. And you can find out how to get to Texas EquiSearch's webpage by just going to scaredmonkeys.com or you know, searching Texas EquiSearch in Google or whatever. Very easy to find. And any of you that listen, they're, you know, there are many of you that do, just $5, you know, $5, $1, $10, $100, whatever you can do. If you can help an organization like Texas EquiSearch help find whoever, Kaylee Anthony or Jennifer Kessie or Natalie Holloway or whoever, I said three very high-profile case names there, but there are many. And to Texas EquiSearch, every person that they're looking for is high profile. That's just how important that is. I want to thank my guests this evening, Dr. Bev Smallwood, Elaine Buff. She's the sister of the slain police officer, Davina Buff-Jones. And what a tragedy that story is. Mark Williams from WNDB-AM. Nancy Grace, if you're listening, be a little nicer to Mark. He's a nice guy when he comes on the show. You don't have to bite his head off when he's on there. No, I'm just kidding. And, of course, our favorite bounty hunter next to dog, Leonard Padilla. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. My name is Dana Pretzer. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again real soon.
You've been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.